Welcome all sports fans. On this podcast,
no sport is left behind.
I'm Justin Williams.
I'm Cabrera Duran, and this is our brother from Down Under,
me, Wallace Bruce.
We are the Pro Sports Podcasters,
filling you in on the latest news from the world of sports.
In this episode, we talk all things football with offensive lineman Kelly Butler, who played in the NFL, CFL, and Arena Leagues. We also look at the final match that's set up in the World Test Cricket Championships between India and New Zealand. And we talk a little bit about whether or not Toronto fans should have faith in their Toronto Maple Leafs this particular season. Now let's get right to it.
Ladies and gentlemen, today in Pro Sports Podcasters, we have the one and only Kelly Don. This gentleman played in both the NFL and the CFL. His track record is amazing as he is. We've just had a whole time laughing our asses off over what this man is talking about. This is going to be one of the funniest podcasts to date. Kelly, how you doing?
I'm good, man. I'm loving that shit. My name is Kelly Don Butler, not a Kelly Don. I wish my name was just Kelly Don. You know what I'm saying? That'd be a dope-ass name. I'm Kelly Kelly Don. I like that shit.
KDB coming at
KDB, you. Man. Yeah, OJ, like OGB, you know what I'm saying? Or, you know, I ODB. Like that shit. How are you guys?
Good. Warmer than Winnipeg right now.
Where are you guys?
Ontario, Toronto specifically.
I hate you. Hate us. You guys got shit to do. You guys got Drake over there the weekend. Fuck, we ain't got none of that shit here, dog.
Hold on, we don't have any shit to do these days. Okay, we're still locked down. So
yeah,
but every day we're locked down here. Like COVID and Winnipeg is just that's how it's always been though. Like in the wintertime, we don't go out. So like when you guys are going out, like. Before COVID, that's how it always is in Winnipeg. So, like, Winnipeg, that's why we're tough here. Tough.
Basically, it hasn't been an adjustment for you.
It has been. I mean, you just Winnipeg, that's why they came up with it. We stay in our house. There ain't shit else to do. That's why our numbers were for low for a little while because it's so fucking cold here. And now we're just focused because we're resilient. Like, Winnipeg is the most resilient city. Beautiful people. We didn't win shit for a while with the Bombers. Now we won. And now we coming back strong. You know, vaccines is coming back. Right now, kids are... getting back into school, teachers are strong, and, you know, football's coming back and women's sports. So I'm excited about 2021. Excited.
I was going to say, actually, Winnipeg, technically they're the reigning champions because there was no 2020 season in CFL football.
Yeah, I would cancel CFL. I cancel CFL, man. Just keep it like that. Just quit right now. We 2020 champions, fuck it. We ain't going back. That's it. I mean, you're the last champion forever. That's it.
For eternity.
You want to come back after fraternity ever? Like, you can come up with some new league, like 2021 COVID, but like right now, yeah, we're the best. Before COVID, yeah, we were the best team ever. We're the last team to win.
I was rooting for you guys the whole time during the playoffs, during everything. I was all about it.
It was cool because growing up here, as far as with my program, Recruit Ready, and with the people, the coaches that I've done here, playing for a purpose, we had a lot of local guys that played on the team. Nick Dembski, Brady Olivier, and with our multi-level programmer with Recruit Ready, you know, a lot of guys go through the throughout the program and play throughout Canada and also play throughout the CFL. And we have Big Dave Onyemata playing in the New Orleans Saints. So it's exciting to see people playing and winning and also seeing some of my former teammates on both sides of the board. I play with Drew Brees and I help coach Dave Onyemata. So it's exciting.
Unrelated question, whiskey or beer?
I don't drink anymore, but when I did drink beer, Coors Light, just hang out with Kid Rock. We used to get fucked up.
You, the Silver Bullets, baby. 2000,
Silver Bullets. He had a big ass, at his house, he had like a trailer park in the back where his pool was. So he wasn't poor, but he wanted to pretend to be poor, so he got a trailer park. But he filled that shit up in his beast. Like, look at this, KB. Filled it up with Coors Light. I'm like, I don't know if this is white trash or rich trash, but fuck, give me a beer. But I don't know. I guess it was just cool. It was like, that showed me that you can be yourself and be rich and do whatever the fuck you want. I learned that at like 20, 24, 21 years old. I'm like, I just couldn't sing. I was like, Kid Rock, when I get done with this football thing, I'd be your bodyguard. And we used to joke and shit, and I got cut, and he didn't answer his phone. I was upset.
I was gonna say, oh my God, you hung out with Kid Rock? That's amazing.
Yeah, that's my boy. He used to come up here. He came up here when we played. He had his concert here. So Brendan Labatt was able to come on the bus. He met his bodyguard, met his whole crew. We had a great time. Brendan Labatt was actually in the prayer before Kid Rock performed. We hung out. And then he came up here again, and I brought a bunch of the Bombers, Doug Brown and all those guys, and went down when was at MTS. And yeah, it was fun. It was awesome.
That's awesome.
K-Rod's cool dude. Yeah, it was fun.
He seems like a good guy. Like, I have all of his albums. Dude's phenomenal.
He's like you know, he go through stages. He's a rock star. He said, KB, if you hang out with me, I can go out there and have a dead hooker and cocaine and be a superstar. You're going to go to jail. I'm like, fuck, man, right? So should we keep hanging out? He's like, we'll see.
Should we keep hanging out?
And we had to ask ourselves that. I was like, fuck it, you'll mail me. I'll be your, you know. So, yeah, it's just like in Detroit, when I was playing there for the Lions, I was hanging out with Kid Rock, Chris Chelios, and that whole camaraderie and stuff like that. So at one point, it was the best time of my life. Then I was no longer playing football, and it was the worst time because it was memories of making mistakes. And then now that I got my total and permanent disability, these are just great stories for podcasts. This shit's fucking awesome.
So Kid Rock or Eminem?
See, that's a trick question. Like, both of them. Obviously, they're white and from in Michigan. Like, I'm kicking up with a team here. Like, yeah, fuck, I'm taking both of them. I'm taking them both. Kid Rock and Eminem. I'm taking them both. I want them both. That's how I'm taking that question. Right. I want them both.
All right. You're going political on that
one. But I would say Eminem, honestly, he was revolutionary because he was able to articulate at a mind frame when PTSD and mental health and Adderall and ADHD, you know, that environment of being able to say what we wanted to say and finally being to be accepted. So when he got accepted by Dr. Dre and then he accepted 50 and like he really put a lot of people on with D12 and started building that momentum. And I mean, at the end of the day, it's iconic to look at those two people being from the same area and still being cool. You know, like Vanilla Ice is corny as fuck. You understand? So it's like Kid Rock and Eminem, they cool. So they still hold their cool even now. So both of them.
I was going to say, I read one where that apparently Eminem was actually going to give up on rapping when he heard Vanilla Ice's Ice Ice Baby. He was like, this is obviously not going to work for me because I apparently don't have the skill. But then he rose above that and just became the god that he is.
Yeah, that's how I feel about the Lions right now. When they were 0-16, we were going to stop. They were going to take the Lions out of football. And the Fours were like, we own cars, so shut the fuck up. And now they gave a chance. And, you know, they got a new coach. So it's one of those things that you look at certain things where if the bar is so low, it opens the door to be so high, but you just got to recreate yourself. Like, look at, like, Drake. Like, he was in a wheelchair on Degrassi. Now he's, like, the toughest dude in the world. I've never met the guy, and you guys are from Toronto, but I don't know. He might be tough and pretending to be soft, or might be soft and pretending to be tough. But it's kind of like they're both very talented, and I'm very happy for music with Eminem and Drake, especially being in Canada and seeing both sides of the border and seeing it's like if you are really – the one thing I look about Eminem and Drake – is if you're passionate about your craft, you'll push it forward, regardless of what people think.
You mentioned the Lions coming up, and I'm wondering what you think of their moving on from Matt Stafford.
I'm good. Matt Stafford, Matt Patricia, all that whole environment, I think it's a dying breed. The Patriot way after Tom Brady left was not what it was, and all of the Patriots' assistants haven't really done any better than than Bill Belichick. So with Matt Stafford, it's like his course is run. He needs a new fresh start. And then with Dan Campbell, I play with Dan. Dan's a cool motherfucker. Texas A&M, he goes hard. He's going to bring that culture and that Kid Rock slash Eminem. He's the right guy for the job, in my opinion. I played with Hank Fraley. He was on the cover when he played for Philadelphia. So me and Hank played together at Cleveland. He's a good dude. He's solid. And he knows what he's talking about. So I think with a quarterback that's accustomed to like that, with a chip on your shoulder, you want that with Goff. You know, you have some weapons. Right now, they have the most black coaches on the staff. And as long as they can kind of get the momentum going and the buy-in back in, I think they should be pretty good because I think for a period of time there, the Ford family wanted to run the team, but they should have been running, you know, more focused on the cars. And I think now Bill Ford Jr. is giving, like the people he hired an opportunity to take it in that direction and sit back.
Where do you think their greatest weakness lies? What should they address in the draft?
Their greatest weakness right now is just like an identity right now because you're kind of starting and stopping. So you got to look at that identity right now saying the best teams, they're going to have a solid offensive line first and foremost. So you got to kind of go out there with the depth and make sure he's protected. And you got to get some people that can stop the ball. So I would start interior and build out. And his leadership right now, you know what I'm saying? Jared Goff is he's got to break that stereotype because he comes off as kind of a fucking asshole, to be honest with you. He comes off as an arrogant prick. And he didn't really play well. So you got to just think where he's at with that. And just making sure you surround him with vets. I'm not a big fan of building team. I feel like You want to build your team young to have them walk into it, but you got to have some guys that are in that position. So I think with the staff, with Antoine Randall, L, and those guys, get a couple vets, and then bring in a guy like, you know, that's a solid guy. Because if somebody falls back, I might go after Bridgewater or somebody. I would go after somebody that's durable, that have a 1-2 punch that can help lead this organization.
Okay. No, I get it.
Yeah. Seems sad.
What would you do? I mean, because you think about it, like, they've gone with wide receivers. That didn't work. I was part of that shit. If you like the teams that have the best foundation, you just got to have a good interior and deterior line, and then you need some senior leadership. So I don't see anybody in the draft right now that's going to come out there and just be a gun blazer that's going to recreate history. But if you can surround some people that have done it for a while, it's just kind of like what the Las Vegas Knights did. Build with people that have some experience and then work in the draft, not this year, but next year.
Yeah, I would think, for me, I'd say I would begin with the offensive line 100%, begin in the trenches. Obviously, Goff showed what he can do when he's got good protection in front of him. So that's where I would start.
I don't know about Goff, though. I think McVay is not what he's supposed to be, first of all. And I'm not sure what Goff is because he wasn't really great in college. You understand? And he had one good year. And then afterwards, he just kind of shit the bed this year. So he's got a lot to prove.
And then also being in that division, I'd say on the defensive side of the ball, I'd be looking at the secondary.
Secondary, cool. I mean, I think the secondary, you got a lot of – if you can't get any pressure off your front four, it doesn't matter what secondary you have. So your front four has got to go out there and make that quarterback move, because if he's got time to have his reads front side or backside, I don't care about the secondary. I need interior guys to push the guys back to collapse the pocket to make that quarterback have to move around and look around. Secondary is probably my least concern if my front four are good. You know what I'm saying? I would build a secondary later because it's a misconception. Because the longer he has to hold the ball, at the end of the day, he's going to wear these guys down.
Now, because we're on the topic of the draft, I got to ask, how was it for you to sit significantly longer than everyone had sort of anticipated, because you were a highly ranked tackle coming out of college at your draft?
Honestly, when you look at it from my perspective now, it was immature. You know, I was afraid. I left. I was upset that I didn't make all conference. I hadn't had a conversation with Coach Tiller. So we left the Georgia game, and I went to train in Arizona. And you know, I did extremely well. And then before the draft, I got arrested. I mean, you know, I had finished everything, went out to celebrate, and a guy pulled a gun on me. We started somewhat black, and we got into a fight. Got arrested that night. The next morning, I informed my agent. And then I had a seatbelt ticket that I didn't pay, so I was trying to go back and forth, so I got pulled over again for not having a seatbelt ticket. So in 2 days, I got arrested twice, and I had to inform all the teams about the situation, just trying to do the stand-up thing. So I did that. So now coming out early was, you know, I was the first player from Purdue's history to come out early. And now with these kind of things, you know, when you come out early, they look at your character and your maturity. So now I look immature. So I'm like, all right, cool. And then so the first day goes by, and I'm like the second or third, you know, projected. And then I sit on the board from the third round to the sixth round, and I like just cry and cry. And I remember it like it was yesterday. So it was, the draft was 2 days. I was in Arizona, and it was speculated I was supposed to go second or third round draft pick. So I was like, all right. And my buddy Stuart Schrager, we had seven guys or eight guys get drafted that year. And Stu was like, KB, come to Saginaw, I'm going to have a draft party. I'm like, I'm going to chill. You know, I mean, I got in that, you know. So, like, Nick Harwood goes and Stu goes, and that's projected. And then I'm like, all right. And I'm like the next one kind of up.
Yeah.
And I start sitting there. And then the day stops there. So then I got to – so I go watch Man on Fire. And I'm like, anybody that had anything to do with this, you know, I just reminded myself that I'm better than this, you know. And I kind of jumped in that pool like he did and sat there and didn't really watch the draft that much the next day. And Greg Olson was my offensive coordinator and quarterback coach at Purdue. And he was the quarterback coach at the Detroit Lions.
Yeah.
So he knew my character, spoke up for me, and I was there. And the first day I got there, they were like, yeah, if you had stayed your senior year, you'd be a top 10 draft pick. So, shit, I don't know. I mean, then I just kind of took that motivation and put it in, and I started the following year and started, you know, every single game. So I think you can take any situation and turn it into a positive. But, you know, that transition of off the field, I wasn't really prepared for that either. So I was very much so immature as far as dealing with my issues because both my parents were gone, got a lot of money, and just that whole environment, it changes you.
Yeah, that's got to be a crazy thing to go through at that time. Crazy.
Now, it was wild because I played with Charles Rogers. Me and Charles played AAU basketball together when we were 14, 15 years old. Like, Charles is my boy. Like, I've known Chuck for a while, and me and then Stu and him ran track together. So we all in the league together, but we all kind of grown up together. And I played AAU basketball, so we're just – me and Charles Rogers play AAU basketball together. Michigan State basketball camp, we're all together. We all play in all the All-Star games, so we're all cool as shit. So then Chuck is like a year ahead of us. So he goes and plays number two overall pick for Detroit, gets injured. And then when I go there, so we're partying, having a good time, and he took care of me. And in the year I'm starting, he breaks his collarbone again, you know? And I think it was like, we didn't know what we were doing. We were trying to do it. And like, I just feel like we were all like a year off, like timing wise, you know, injury wise. And that team was a really good team, you know, the team with Steve Mariucci. And then they brought Ralph Marinelli and they brought fucking Mike March dumbass in there. Larry Bechtel's dumbass.
When you were playing, was there any players that you typically watched out for or didn't enjoy playing against?
Oh, yeah, the good ones, obviously, for fuck's sake. I mean,
those guys. The guys that blew by me on the end, right?
Yeah, the ones that are good, like the ones that got all the fucking sacks. Like, yeah, that motherfucker. Yeah.
Those assholes.
Injured? Oh, shit, he's playing? Why? Fuck, he's done. Yeah, all these fuckers go, man. Like, here's what I am. I'm funny, I'm fast, and I'm physical. I'm not that fucking smart. So the more complex the defense, the worse my game was, all right? So Damian Woody, I want to say thank you to Damian Woody and Hank Fraley. I owe them my paychecks because they told me the plays for the first – they just told me all my guards. So, like, it's one-on-one, I'll pretty much kick your ass. Besides Julius Peppers, he kicked my ass. He whooped my ass. He kicked my ass. So I ain't going to say I can kick everybody's ass. But some of them, I can kick people's ass. A few, maybe not a lot. So I think the more athletic you were, it was a problem. But a lot of people didn't take football serious. So, like, when I'm dealing with more of a certain type of defensive end, the one that goes every fucking play like J.J. Watts.
Somebody who goes hard 100% of the time?
Oh, he's fucking annoying. Oh, he's annoying. Oh, God. Ugh. You're not tired. You want to take this playoff, guy? I got a fucking headache here, all right? Like, I gotta go home and cook dinner and shit. Like, come on, dog, JJ. And, like, if he doesn't talk to you, you're like, oh, shit, I can't play my mental games. Then I'm like, oh, I got to buckle up. I got to actually play some fucking football here. This is not mental. Oh, fuck's sakes. Now it's just, we going to fight now. So me and JJ just fighting. I'm like, shit, fight a goddamn gladiator that's bigger than me. That's, oh, fuck me, man. And then if you don't got no help, oh, Von Miller, you get your ass embarrassed. So it's all about your offensive coordinator. If your offensive coordinator is a fucking moron, it's going to be a long day going against J.J. Watts and Von Miller. So the smarter your offensive coordinator, the better you're, you know, because probability of me going backwards and J.J. going forward, fuck it. Who should win that battle? Fuck, really, right?
Are you involved with the Blue Bombers today?
Yes and no. I mean, I'm involved in a way where I facilitate and help a lot of the athletes that play for the team. But as far as the organization, at times they could do a better job transitioning and working with current and former players. So I'm big about working with the community. I'm big about helping the athletes that come in town, but a direct partnership, no. But I'm an agent for the CFL, so we'll be working when my clients start working when we start signing deals.
Oh, got to put in a lot of that work. That's pretty cool. I didn't know you were an agent. I missed that.
No, I know that was the greatest thing. Like when I got screwed over in football, I was going to come fuck with them over and just set it up better. So yeah, I'm a CFL agent right now. And I saw the trials and tribulations I made. So as an agent, you can be bitter. I'm bitter. Like fucking, like everybody's bitter. Like the girl that broke up with you that went to somebody else, you're bitter for the new dude. It's like everybody's bitter, but nobody wants to say that shit. Yes, I'm fucking bitter. It's personal. And they're like, it's not personal, it's business. So now I'm like, bitch, it's business. I'm bitter. That's why I'm an agent. I'm bitter. I'm a black agent. I'm 6'9". I'm going to intimidate a lot of people. I'm going to be mean as fuck, actually. I'm going to go in there and be like, hey, remember I used to talk to me? Talk to you now. I'm an agent.
That's a God-given advantage, buddy. That's a God-given advantage.
Fucking right is. I slapped the shit out of Wade Miller. Like, pow! Slime my client. I'm an agent. And I'm totally permanently disabled.
He's got some pimp hands going strong.
Go to jail, come back out, because I'm I got my NFL disability, so I'm fucking crazy, too. So I can slap him, and then be like, yo, dog, it's going to be a slap. Like, are you going to sign it? Whap! All right, hey, guys, I'm going to go to jail for this, but we're getting this done. Whap! So, like, they all know that shit, too. They're like, oh, fuck, Kelly's an agent, and he's crazy? So anybody that wants a crazy agent that can slap around GMs, come holler at me.
For the full Kelly Butler interview, you could subscribe to the Pro Sports Podcasters page on Patreon and become one of our primary supporters. For a limited time, you can get a special franchise level, which gives you full access for a lower price. But for a few extra bonus clips, you can check us out at pro.sports.podcasters on Instagram, where we'll have some of the more hilarious moments spent with Kelly Butler. Now back to the show.
Let's talk about the Leafs real quick right now.
Okay.
Because people have been blowing up my DM being like, oh, the Leafs suck. Okay, first off, hold on a second. In the North Division, they are 7 points clear of the Winnipeg Jets, even though they're on a two-game losing streak, them being the Leafs. And cool, I get it. Vancouver isn't exactly top dog considering their minus 12 differential. But you know what? A blind squirrel finds a nut sometimes twice. And in this situation, it's what happened. Furthermore, our goalies are injured. It's like they played running back for the Detroit Lions. Everybody's just out, right? Anderson's out. Campbell is like has like a leg and a half. And then I don't even know who the third guy is.
It starts with an H. What's the guy's name?
I want to say Hutchinson, but that's not it. I know who you're talking about. We signed him before, then we got rid of him and got him back. actually, I think it is Hutchinson. Yeah, it is, actually. So yeah, that's he's in there. He's doing all right. And there was a guy with an S too at one point. It sounded like a soup or whatever his name is. Hold on a second.
I think what fans need to remember as well is that it's a game played on ice, right? Random shit happens. The puck bounces weird ways sometimes. Like not every game is predetermined.
Mm-hmm.
So no matter how much of a favorite you may be, you can lose the occasional game. And yeah, when you're top team in your division, you shouldn't really be, you know, crying about it.
You know when the Leafs are doing well? When ESPN in the States are talking about them. They had about 2 minutes worth of coverage on ESPN this week. That's something. Anyway, go on, Justin.
Okay, yeah, so I was going to say, Hutchinson, he got injured again. So now we have, that's this guy. The guy's name is Joseph Woll. But he is he's our fourth goalie, which he plays for the Marlies. However, he's not the only one we've called up. We had to call up another goalie too, that soup guy or whatever. Cause I put a tweet out being like, he's my soup snake, which is a reference to The Office.
I think these overreactions, what they're really about is not what's happening right now. It's about what could happen later. Toronto fans have gotten disappointed time and time again.
Yeah.
So when they see us losing to a significantly weaker team, they look forward and think, is this what's going to happen in the playoffs again this year? And that's what really scares them.
Exactly. And like I said, and like you mentioned too, the Canucks aren't anything to write home about. They're minus 12 differential. They're second last in the North Division. And North isn't supposed to be the toughest division. I believe it's supposed to be the Central Division for the most part with Lightning, Panthers, Hurricanes. But even there, like North Division is rated the second hardest division. However, you could make the argument that North is actually the hardest division, given the fact it has the Leafs, Jets, and Oilers in it. And on top of that, the Flames and Canadiens made the playoffs last year. Technically, Toronto didn't. We were eliminated in the preliminary round against Columbus.
The ridiculous little thing they set up.
Yeah, that was weird. The Flames went decently far in the playoffs as well. So you could also argue, there's a lot of arguments to be made. North is like first or second, depending who you ask. So to be first overall and first in a hard division is impressive, hard to maintain. And we're using our fourth goalkeeper. Like, Nee, you are going to get a call probably on Thursday to play goalie.
All right. I look forward to that. But Justin, I have two questions in relation to the North division. Because there is a slight disadvantage in the fact that they cannot play south of the border. So they can't play anyone in the other three divisions until the playoffs.
Correct.
So I have two questions. Firstly, how will the playoffs work this year? And secondly, will the Leafs be able to overcome not facing any of these American teams until the playoffs? Or is that going to be a hindrance?
Okay, so let's address the latter of the two questions. So when it comes to whether it'll be a hindrance or not, I feel like it's not going to be. Just because they are used to facing these teams in itself. Like, they're used to facing the Panthers, Lightning, Islanders, Capitals. Yeah, albeit it's been a year, but however, keep in mind, as I said, this is a strong division. The Edmonton Oilers alone have two of the best players in the past 4 years, 5 years, with McDavid and Draisaitl.
Winnipeg's no slouch.
And Winnipeg is no slouch. Mind you, they got rid of Patrick Laine, as we're discussion about. And the Canadiens and Flames are powerful. It's the Canucks and Senators, which are kind of like, meh. But Toronto is known to play down to teams. So when it comes to facing teams they haven't faced in a while, like Boston, Vegas, Avalanche, Blues, I expect the first game to kind of be like a feeler. So I expect almost the Leafs to lose their first game. However, I don't see it being too much of a worry. I can see it being like a slight concern for the first game or two, but I'm pretty convinced the Leafs are going to go all the way this year.
I see it as a bit of an advantage, to be honest.
I think so, too.
Because I'd say that the Leafs and actually a couple of the other North Division teams have some of the most skilled players, period, in the league.
Mm-hmm.
The most skilled players. And when the teams in the States right now, south of the border, not having to face those guys on a regular basis, it might actually give you a false sense of security as to, you know, what your defense is like against other teams as opposed to teams that are stacked with offensive weapons. And the Leafs is one of those teams. So I think they might even be too fast for the American teams right off the bat until they adjust.
I agree. Which is exactly. So it's also element of surprise. People often worry about, you know, Tampa Bay because they, you know, because they're the champions and because Boston and, you know, Toronto fans fear Boston. And it's like, okay, cool. And Blue Jackets, they were a ladder team last year, but we lost to them. The Leafs lost to them, I should say. So I can see why there's going to be skepticism and worry about people fearing other teams from different divisions. But they should fear the Leafs and the North Division just as much, if not more.
Exactly.
But people tend to forget that. Now, to further your point about what is going to happen with the playoffs, not much has been discussed in the way of confirmation of that. There has been whispers and rumors that Gary Bettman, who's the commissioner, has said that they're going to do another bubble tournament again.
That would make sense.
Right, just to ensure that absolutely no good players, or I shouldn't say good players, any player gets COVID, right? Now, albeit there's a risk of wherever that has to be, that place will be, they'll fly there. And that could always be a risk. So the Leafs would probably, or any Canadian team, would have to isolate for 14 days or have that two test thing, which they're doing now. However, like I said, it's not set in stone, but they could be doing what they're doing with baseball, and that's just going all around Florida. And I've heard California could also be a place for that too. So San Jose and, you know,
LA,
thank you. Just all those places. So I can see it being that as well, but I'd much prefer a bubble, preferably in the north.
Okay. Interesting. This is interesting because we're recording on the weekend of the NBA All-Star Game, and if I'm not mistaken, the NHL will not be having an All-Star Game.
Correct.
What are your thoughts on that, Justin?
So, this is going to sound really interesting from my perspective in the sense that I don't care for any All-Star Game, basketball, MLB, NHL. What I enjoy seeing are the essential tryouts of it, so that I will miss. Where who has the hardest shot, who has the best...
the skills competitions.
Yeah, those are what I enjoy seeing, not so much the games, because they're always weird and they're not an accurate representation, and like nobody really, I don't really care. I remember watching one All-Star game and there was a goalie, Tuukka Rask, was being interviewed as the game was going on, like literally inside his helmet the game was going on, and he let in 3 goals with the interview, so they told him to stop answering questions.
There's only a couple of sports I actually like the All-Star Game in, and that's I enjoy All-Star Games in basketball. I have no issue with the All-Star Game in basketball because it's just a scoring show, right?
Yeah.
And I like it in baseball as well. Baseball kind of lends itself to being played in an All-Star format. It works for baseball. But hockey and football, for me, are the worst because you can't really hit. Right. For such physical games, you're not supposed to hit that hard in an All-Star game. It's considered like, you know, bad form. Mm-hmm.
and it is a bit of, it becomes a bit of a fluffy exhibition. So here's my thing. All-star nominations need to happen. There needs to be some sort of an all-star recognition, because I know some player contracts have that built in as an incentive.
Yeah.
But the game itself, like, let's look at football, for example, the Pro Bowl. The Pro Bowl became a glorified Madden exercise because
it's a joke.
There was no actual game. So there was just a few guys playing Madden this year because of the pandemic. Now, I actually miss the baseball All-Star game when it used to count for something. Because baseball, if you remember, the winner of that game used to have home field advantage for their league in the World Series.
Now National League versus American League.
Yeah, that was cool. So if baseball ever went back to that, I'd be down for it. Because baseball's not too taxing. There's not a whole lot of contact. Injuries are minimal. And pitchers get pulled after one or two innings. It's relatively low risk.
Exactly. You're not going to burn any star pitchers. The only thing they really got to hold back on is you're not going to have guys like, you know, running the back catcher or anything like that. For the most part, you can play a pretty full game without really holding back.
Yeah, and even the idea of, you know, the Red Sox and the Yankees, for one day, they kind of agreed to get along because they're helping their league to get an extra game advantage in the World Series. I think that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
But as the other games, I think this is a nomination. Just a simple nomination based on a weighting of fans, coaches, and players, we're good.
I agree. I was going to say the MLB is the only one where the All-Star game actually has some slight matter to it and makes it almost worth the hype. Well, it used to, yeah. So.
But yeah.
I don't know.
It's big for the pitchers, too. Like, I think people forget that it's a big thing for the pitchers, because in some cases they'll get to face guys they wouldn't normally face during the regular season.
Yes.
Mm. Right? They get a feel for that player a bit, and if they do end up facing them in the playoffs, it's something they can look back at, you know?
Mm-hmm. Fondly, too. Yeah, no, I see there's benefits to it.
And one thing the NHL and MLB do is they make sure that one player from every team is represented. What is your take on that, guys?
That should be adopted by all sports leagues.
Yeah, I'm cool with it.
Yeah. Yep. Okay. Mm.
It helps keeps the fan base happy too, right? I mean, some teams have very small fan bases, but then they get an all-star on their team and it gives them something to cheer for.
Mm-hmm. And maybe some players won't get screwed over. Fleet.
Sorry.
All right. Sorry, got a cough here, guys.
Oh, man. There's something going on.
What do they all share in common? What do they all share in common? Air.
They have a love for Jurassic Park.
Jimmy Butler. Oh. Now, the All-Star voting, I have a problem with the All-Star voting because it is fan-based, and I know there's one former Australian player who believes that it's basically favors China because they can get more votes in than anyone else, but it is definitely fan-focused to the point where if you have a solid social media gang, you're going to get in over someone who's had a better season.
Correct.
That's just the facts. You can campaign your way into the All-Star game. And when like I said, some players' contracts have that incentive. Mm-hmm. So it's a bit of a problem when that happens, when someone misses out because they're too busy working on their game as opposed to their, you know, campaign, if you will.
Yeah, their mic ability.
Right. Or if they play in a small market, like, there's some players who will be naturally disadvantaged because they play in a small market or, as we know, in the wrong country.
Yeah.
I feel another cough coming
on.
They
just get missed.
Yes, I agree. I was going to say, there's one All-Star game, which I don't count as an All-Star. I count as a showcase that I really enjoy, and that's the MLS All-Star game.
Yes.
Just because they're playing on the same team at this point. Again, it's also fan-driven, along with help from the coaches. But then you face a team that they 100% would never face. Bayern, Arsenal, Juventus. Real Madrid. Mm-hmm. Oh,
yeah,
God.
Love that game.
Oh my God, I love when that happens.
Yeah, that's pretty cool when they do that.
I do. I was going to say, when they're facing Real Madrid, I was hoping that Ronaldo was going to be there, but he did not show. That was all.
Anyway, the start of the millennium, Australia was so good at cricket. This is, I'm not biased, this is just fact.
Of course not.
Australia was so good at cricket. Stop it. Australia was so good at cricket. Australia was so good at cricket that the ICC organized a one-off test match where it was Australia against the world. So they picked the world's best 11 from everywhere else but Australia, and they played against Australia in a test match in Sydney. And then they played 3 one-day matches, I think, in Melbourne and Sydney. So that was the Australia versus the world 11. I think that was late 90s or early 2000s. And then following that, I've seen different versions where it's usually been for fundraising, where it's been like an all-star 11 against a country and that kind of thing. But the last official all-star game I can remember was that series between Australia and the World 11. So Australia won the test series, and I think they won the one-day series 2-1 or 3-0. Those were the days. Anyway.
So we now know which two countries will be represented in the World Test Cricket Championships.
Yes. Thanks, Kobe. It will be India and New Zealand. And they will face each other in June at the Lord's Cricket Ground in London over in England. So that'll be a fun match to watch, no doubt.
Who's your early pick?
Honestly, I think New Zealand is slightly favored. Now, if India have... India was missing Virat Kohli when they toured Australia. He is their star batsman. He has a huge number of followers on Instagram. Go look him up. He has more followers in some countries than people. But this guy's a star. He missed a tour of Australia, but India was able to win without him. If he goes to England, he gives India an added level in the batting lineup. So he'll be a big guy to get back. I know he played against England in this series, but they didn't need him as much because they quite frankly dominated England in the last three matches. I would say New Zealand had a slight edge because of the conditions. Okay. India typically have a reputation for playing better at home than they do away. Whereas New Zealand tend to be a bit more balanced. They can play pretty well at home, but they can also hold their own away from home. So that's why I give them a slight advantage at Lord's.
I was going to say, off my quick Google research, India versus New Zealand in cricket, the last they faced 5 times, New Zealand has won 5 out of 5.
So New Zealand last played in December, January. They played the West Indies. They won that series 2-0, and then they beat Pakistan to start that again 2-0 to start the new year. Start the new year right, I guess.
And Justin, you said that they've dominated India in Test cricket?
Yeah, so according to my research, the last time these two teams faced was February 28th to March 2nd of 2020. And New Zealand had won.
And Justin, where did that match take place?
Oh, that's a question I was not prepared to answer.
Way to go, Justin.
I'm so sorry. Forgive me, Father, for I have sinned. Hagley Oval.
Hagley where?
Hagley Oval. Hagley Oval. That's New Zealand. I believe that's Christchurch.
Oh, okay. So, and you said the home team always has the advantage.
They have a natural advantage, but it's not impossible for the visiting side to win.
And New Zealand uses a kookaburra ball, right?
That is right.
As we learned, yeah.
We're going to have to find out which ball they're going to use for the final. Because that's, as we learned before, there are 3 balls in international cricket. India uses one. England uses one. And New Zealand uses one.
So give your guy at Lord's a call, Nee, and figure out what kind of ball they're going to use.
I'll do that. That's the headquarters of Test of World Cricket. So I'll give it a crack.
Yeah, give your boy a call.
I'll see if I can get past front doors. I just wanted to touch on something that's very significant for the Australians. Australia missed out on the final by 0.8 points in the final table for the World Test Championship.
Okay.
If we take our minds back to the Southern Hemisphere summer, so a couple of months ago, Australia was actually docked 4 points for pace of play. They were they were delivering their overs too slowly. So the match referee said, nope, we're going to punish you. We're going to dock you points. That, in the end, has cost them a spot in the final.
Now, is pace of play become an issue in cricket?
It can be used as a way of slowing down or forcing a draw. If you know you're going to lose, you just bowl your overs slower, forcing a stalemate that way. So, yes, in some instances, the governing body has tried to crack down on that, and they've done it by fining players. They usually fine the captain, and then they'll fine the team. And then in this instance, it's obviously been an ongoing thing across multiple matches, so they really wanted to send a message, so they docked the team points.
And this is the team that got nailed with sandpaper gate, so they're known as cheaters.
I don't know why you're saying that. They're not. They're
not. Sandpaper, water, all the gates.
They didn't even do that properly, all right? They're not cheaters. They don't know how to cheat.
This match is brought to you by Home Depot.
Yeah, for all your renovation needs, we have sandpaper, polyfiller, and more.
Polyfiller.
So you can fill in the gaps when your team is behind on pace to play.
And if you're trying to piece together why they lost, Gorilla Glue is on sale as well.
Don't put it in your head.
Home Depot, we are looking for sponsors at this time, so you can contact us through our social medias.
I love us.